At this time, I would like to introduce the members of the University of Alaska Board of Regents who are with us today. In doing so, I might say that we at UAF do not take their presence for granted. You must understand that some of them are attending their fifth or sixth commencement in 1 week. We are grateful for their presence here this afternoon. Will you please hold your applause until all whom I have introduced are standing? Edward Rasmussen, president of the board from Anchorage. Jeffrey Cook, vice president from Fairbanks. Donald Abel Jr., secretary from Juneau. Herbert Lang, treasurer from Anchorage. Hugh B. Fate, Jr., from Fairbanks. Sam Keto, Jr., from Anchorage. Margaret Hall, from Kodiak. Thomas McLeod, from Fairbanks. John Shively, from Anchorage. Timothy Burgess, from Fairbanks, but representing the entire student body. Ladies and gentlemen, the University of Alaska Board of Regents. Members of the statewide administration who are with us today, Jay Barton, president of the university and ex-officio member of the Board of Regents. George West, acting academic vice president. In addition, we are honored by the presence of the recipient of the 1981 University of Alaska Distinguished Alumnus Award, Joseph E. Usabelli, who graduated in 1969 with a Bachelor of Science degree in civil engineering. It is especially meaningful to honor Mr. Usabelli this year, since his son, Joe Jr., is a member of the class of 1981. Mr. Usabelli. There are also members of the audience whom I would like to introduce to you. Dr. William R. Wood, fourth president of the university and president emeritus. Mr. Brian Brundine, past president of the Board of Regents and member of the honored alumni class of 1961. I would like to welcome our other alumni whom we honor this weekend. Three members of the class of 1931 are with us today on the 50th anniversary of their graduation from the University of Alaska. I would like them to stand so that we may recognize them. Fred Beeler from Michigan, who received a Bachelor of Science degree in mining engineering. Mr. Beeler. Walter J. Kuban from California, who received a Bachelor of Science degree in civil engineering. Harold Strandberg, who appears to have the best of both worlds by maintaining a residence in both Manly Hot Springs and the Sun Belt. Mr. Strandberg received a Bachelor of Science degree in mining and geology. Graduates from the classes of 36, 41, etc., every 5 years from 36 forward are also being honored this weekend And we are very pleased to have so many members of these honored classes with us today. Our commencement speaker this afternoon has spent a lifetime on research in Alaska, Canada, the High Arctic, and Antarctica. He has published more than 50 papers and books on these subjects. His interests in Alaska date back to 1934 and 36, when he was a member of the Memorial Harvard Dartmouth Mount Killian Expedition and the National Geographic Society's Mount Kinley Expedition. His lifelong work has been dedicated to bringing about peaceful cooperation in science in the circumpolar regions. At the present time, he is chairman of the National Academy of Sciences Polar Research Board, probably the nation's most prestigious and influential body on polar research matters. He has been a lifelong colleague and friend of the University of Alaska. It is my honor to present, as commencement speaker for 1981, Dr. Albert Lincoln Washburn.
Members of the Board of Regents, President Barton, Chancellor Cutler, faculty, alumni, ladies and gentlemen of the class of 1981. It was a great honor, a twofold one, to address you on the one hand and to receive an honorary Doctor of Science degree from you on the other. I am humbled and deeply appreciative on both counts. In the brief time available, I shall glance at the North as I knew it yesterday, as I see it today, as it may be tomorrow. I shall emphasize Arctic and Alaskan aspects. In expressing possibly controversial views, I shall be speaking for myself only. For me, yesterday was the mid-1930s when I first had the privilege of visiting Alaska. And it was a privilege, not something to be done to earn more money because of supposed hardships. Most Alaskans were proud to be here rather than outside. Fairbanks still had a frontier flavor to it, despite being a modern town for the times. And the log cabins and adjacent Grail were a reminder of still older yesterdays. The university was already growing under Dr. Bunnell, a quiet, modest man, slight of frame, but with dedicated drive and giant influence. Meeting him was a stimulating experience I shall never forget. He and other university pioneers I was subsequently privileged to know, Chris Elvey, Otto Geist, Larry Irving, Ernest Patti, and Ivor Scarland, among others, would be astounded were they still living to see what they had helped to build. Also during this period, my wife and I were fortunate in being able to ascend the Porcupine River as passengers in a trading scow from Fort Yukon to Old Crow in Canada. From there, we flew to Herschel Island, where we shipped to San Francisco on the Patterson with Captain Ted Peterson, a noted whaler and trader. Although he was in the crow's nest almost continuously for 4 days while navigating the ice en route to Barrow, he stopped long enough en route along the Arctic coast to pick up Tom Gordon, who, living alone, had pulled his own teeth that winter, all of them. The shock had impaired Gordon's speech. He was able to forcefully proclaim that the Arctic was going to hell because he had recently heard an airplane overhead. Of such stuff our pioneers made. Alaska as a whole was indeed growing, but it was World War II that brought it into an international focus that is being continually sharpened. Today, energy and international affairs loom large, and Alaska's resources and its position fronting the Bering Sea and the Arctic Ocean focused a spotlight on the state. Because of Alaska, the United States is one of the circumarctic nations, Canada and the Soviet Union being the largest and closest. Other far northern nations are Finland, Norway with Svalbard, Sweden, Iceland, and the Denmark-Greenland combination, although not all of them have Arctic coastlines. Most of these nations are intimately concerned with happenings above, on, and beneath the Arctic Ocean, whose importance is very significantly increased by offshore oil exploration, the increasing capabilities of navigating the Arctic pack ice, and the advent of nuclear submarines capable of traversing the ocean beneath the ice and utilizing the ice cover as a shield against detection. This international setting provides opportunities for both adversary relationships and mutually advantageous cooperation. Many aspects are of interest, but I shall stress those related to science. Important research problems abound that have relevance to the North. Progress requires both basic and applied research, and my remarks include both. The Arctic is central to many aspects of climate and climatic change. The polar regions play a major role in the climate machine, and it has been suggested that their influence on climate may be considerably greater than formerly believed. Feedback mechanisms are especially important, including the accompanying increase in reflectivity or albedo of the Earth's surface as a result of any increase in the spread of snow and ice. The inverse is also true. Should there be a trend toward a decrease in snow and ice cover and a consequent reduction of albedo, there would be a tendency for the trend to become self-reinforcing, which could eventually result in a much warmer and wetter Arctic, as has existed in the past. The polar regions are also subject to anthropogenic climatic change. Burning of fossil fuel may significantly increase the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere and lead to a greenhouse effect and a warming trend. Estimates of potential high latitude temperature increase by the year 2050 range from 2 degrees to more than 7 degrees Celsius. Any change of such magnitude would drastically curtail the extent of pack ice and entail feedback effects and possibly an ice-free Arctic Ocean. Such a climatic change would also affect permafrost and activities related to permafrost conditions. Although the carbon dioxide problem still contains many unanswered questions and is presently under intense study, we can be reasonably sure that any climatic warming of this kind would be greatest at high latitudes and would impact the circumarctic nations in a major way. It would also seriously impact world coastlines and low-lying cities subject to flooding if polar warming released to the oceans large masses of glacier ice from Antarctica and Greenland. Clearly, careful monitoring of high-latitude carbon dioxide levels is of high priority. Many fields, in addition to climate, have a critical high-latitude component. A number of geophysical studies are best pursued at high latitudes, including observations of the ionosphere and the magnetosphere, and field studies of snow, ice, and permafrost. The Arctic Ocean and its basin only now begin to be studied in detail. Arctic biology and Arctic biomedical research are obvious areas for study. And extending the possibilities of subarctic agriculture is a research area whose results could be highly significant for the years to come. Anthropology and archaeology have special pertinence to Alaska, since Alaska is, in a sense, the cradle of the Americas. Most authorities agree that a Bering land bridge linking Siberia to Alaska during a form of low sea level served as the main route to the New World. Just when the first migration took place is still unknown. The recent discoveries in the Yukon along the Porcupine River suggest considerably greater antiquity than formerly believed. And archaeologists are now seriously discussing the possibility that the first white people arrived as early as 20 to 30,000 years ago. A few would say even earlier. This is intriguing stuff. In the social sciences, the influx of money and of temporary workers for pipeline and other construction projects has brought its own problems, including alcohol and drug abuse. Oil and gas have created a new economic climate, and settlement of the native land claims has resulted in financial and political clout for native residents and in welcome opportunities for native leadership and initiatives. These events have created socioeconomic situations of particular import for Alaska. The growth problems also affecting northern development in Canada and elsewhere. Science provides many opportunities for mutually beneficial cooperation among the circumarctic nations. Recent examples of cooperation: oceanographic research projects north and east of Greenland, such as the Fram 1, 2, and 3 expeditions in 1979-81, in all of which the Office of Naval Research has been the prime mover, and such as the IMA voyage in 1980, organized by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences. Scientists from Canada, Scandinavia, and the United States have participated in all these efforts. The Greenland Ice Sheet Program, GISP, financed by the National Science Foundation since 1977, is another illustration. The stratigraphy of the ice is revealed by core drilling, and by analysis, the oxygen isotope record has permitted major progress in knowledge of climatic changes. This program involves Danish and Swiss scientists, in addition to those from this country. Unfortunately, Soviet cooperation in national Arctic research efforts, much to be desired, remains elusive, unlike Soviet cooperation in Antarctic research. Funding of research and the need to set priorities raise questions of science policy. We have vital interests in our Arctic, that is, Alaska, but by contrast with Antarctic research, responsibilities for science activities are fragmented among various federal agencies, state agencies, and the private sector. With respect to the federal government, there was no formal interagency effort at coordination prior to 1968, when the Interagency Arctic Research Coordinating Committee was established. However, this committee evolved into a rather low-level forum for exchange of information, rather than effective coordination, and in 1978 was abolished as ineffective, along with its informative Arctic Bulletin. Since then, the group has met only informally to continue exchange of information. Although a general federal statement regarding Arctic policy exists, the lack of effective overall policy guidance has generated a call to examine the question of a federal Arctic science policy. The future of the Naval Arctic Research Laboratory, NARL at Point Barrow, illustrates the policy need. NARL's shutdown last year leaves the United States as the only circumarctic nation without one or more active research centers north of the Arctic Circle. and just at a time when the need for one seems to be ever more urgent in view of oil and gas activities and associated environmental problems. This is not to say that NARL itself and its $7 million or so annual basic cost should be perpetuated, only that I think it would be tragic if we did not have at least one active and well-equipped Arctic field laboratory suitably located to be most effective in the national interest in the years to come. Fortunately, a major review of Arctic science policy was mandated last December. Section 1007 of Public Law 96407 calls for a study to be conducted by the Secretary of the Interior, the Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of Energy with a view, among other things, and I quote, to making recommendations on the need for redirecting the United States Arctic research policy and the role of NARL facilities in developing and implementing that policy. After completion of the study, the Secretary shall make recommendations on, among other things, the appropriate level of federal funding for scientific and technological research on the Arctic environment and its uses. This study is to be submitted to Congress by the 2nd of December of this year, but to the best of my knowledge, has not yet been started. There are a number of issues to be addressed, and the time available to address them would seem to be overly short for a study of this importance. A separate but related matter is that we do not have a properly equipped research vessel for operating in pack ice. The Polar Research Board of the National Research Council has already expressed itself regarding this need in Antarctic research. In addition, I share the view of numerous Alaskans that there should also be a vessel dedicated to Arctic research. To be sure, we have the Polar Sea and the Polar Star, which provide flexibility between Arctic and Antarctic work, but these are Coast Guard icebreakers with their own tasks. They can certainly support research and do so. They are not designed as research vessels, but all the special laboratories and facilities that such vessels require. Yet an ability to conduct oceanographic research in pack ice is becoming ever more important, in my opinion. We are behind a number of other nations in this capability. In fact, there are numerous issues of an Arctic science policy that have concerned many in Alaska, including the Alaska Division of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which has issued a white paper on the need for such a policy to guide research and development affecting the state. Also, 2 weeks ago, Senator Murkowski made a speech on the Senate floor in which he stated, quote, I plan to make the development of a national Arctic research policy one of my priorities in this session of the 97th Congress. My colleague, the senior senator from Alaska, shares my concern about the need. A general issue of science policy should concern us is that funding for research tends to be a favorite target for budget cuts when economies must be made. But I believe that research is a lifeline to tomorrow and must be maintained strong at all costs if we are to survive as a strong nation, culturally, economically, and militarily. Basic research is especially vulnerable in that elected officials tend to focus support on projects promising prompt, practical returns and overlook the critical need for assuring in our universities a continuing and lively basic research effort capable of providing the scholars and fundamental ideas and insights on which applied research and a nation's scientific and technological advances are ultimately based. The trend in support of research and development as a whole is of worrisome, in that the proportion of our gross national product devoted to R&D from 1967 to 1978 dropped sharply, while the proportion for Japan, the Soviet Union, and West Germany has risen. The increase for the Soviet Union from about 2.6 to 3.4% of the gross national product made it the leader, whereas West Germany and the United States expended a third less on this basis, with just over 2.2% of the GNP. None of us has a crystal ball to tell us what tomorrow will bring, but I would like to hazard some guesses. Barring world nuclear suicide, I think we should expect ever-increasing activity in the circumarctic nations. The voyage of the experimental icebreaker tanker Manhattan in 1969 and the attainment of the North Pole by the Soviet icebreaker Arctica in 1977 show that navigation in the Arctic pack ice is probably possible the year round if ships are sufficiently massive and powerful. Dome Petroleum in Canada is already projecting a ship of this kind, a Class 10 icebreaker tanker, and tomorrow will almost certainly bring year-round Arctic Ocean traffic if it is economically warranted. Energy will continue to be a vital issue tomorrow, entailing environmental problems that must be faced with a balanced approach instead of swinging between extremes. Native peoples of the circumarctic nations are already exerting political pressures and beginning to do so on a coordinated basis, as evidenced by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference founded at Barrow in 1977. Last year it met at Nuuk, Greenland. I think tomorrow will bring more such activities and pressures. I anticipate that there will continue to be a number of sensitive international issues to be faced by the circumarctic nations. However, I hope that self-interest will lead to accommodations and stimulation of cooperation to our mutual advantage in various spheres, not only science, but also cultural, economic, and political. If my guesses are anywhere near the mark, tomorrow will bring to Alaska, as the United States North, a challenge few other states have faced. This will require vision and cooperation between state and federal agencies, native peoples, and the private sector as a whole. Fortunately, Alaska has the resources, financial and natural, to be an effective partner. Now is the time to plan with vision. But such planning will require knowledge and knowledge research. The University of Alaska is in a unique position to contribute to these needs. The Geophysical Institute illustrates the enviable reputation the university has achieved for sound research and for attracting very able scholars. Quality and innovative thinking are rare commodities to be cherished and carefully nurtured. Tomorrow's Alaska will require them to the hilt, and the university can provide them in numerous fields to help meet the special needs imposed by the northern environment. Class of 1981, I have stressed Alaska's strategic position and the opportunities and importance of Arctic research in various fields, both basic and applied. To aid in meeting tomorrow's problems. You and your university, and now I am proud to say also my university, are vital forces in how these problems are to be solved. For most of you, Alaska is your state. Its tomorrow is very directly your tomorrow, and thus, to an intimate degree, your responsibility. One to which you should be able to bring special qualifications as graduates of this university. How this responsibility is carried out will affect not only you and Alaska, but probably the entire United States and all our circumarctic neighbors. Thank you.
Will the candidates for the associate degree please rise? Will the candidates for the baccalaureate degree please rise? Will the candidates for the master's degree please rise? Will the doctoral candidate please rise? President Barton, it is my pleasure to present these candidates for the associate, baccalaureate, master's, and doctor's degrees. The Director of Admissions and Registrar has certified that they have fulfilled all academic requirements for their respective degrees and recommends that they now receive their diplomas.
President Rasmussen, as President of the University of Alaska, I am pleased to present to you these candidates for degrees in their respective departments of instruction as recorded in the official program.
Thank you. By virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska, and upon the recommendation of the President of the University, I confer upon you the associate, baccalaureate, master's, and doctoral degrees to which you are entitled with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto.
Please be seated. F. Lawrence Bennett, Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, will oversee the presentation of degree candidates by college and school.
The president of the Tananaw Valley Community College will present the associate degree candidates from the community college, and the deans of the two academic colleges and five professional schools of the University of Alaska Fairbanks will present the associate and baccalaureate degree candidates from each college or school. The Vice Chancellor for Research and Advanced Study will present the graduate degree candidates. By way of explanation, the gold cords on the shoulders of certain candidates indicate that they are being graduated with academic honor.